1 minute to midnight. Are you concerned about education? I am. One of my deepest concerns is that while education systems around the world are being reformed, many of these reforms are being driven by political and commercial interests that misunderstand how real people learn and how great schools actually work. As a result, they are damaging the prospects of countless young people. Sooner or later, for better or for worse, they will affect you or someone you know. It's important to understand what these reforms are about. If you agree that they're going in the wrong direction, I hope you will become part of the movement to a more holistic approach that nurtures the diverse talents of all our children. I'm Nick Corston. I'm co-founder of a community enterprise, a non-profit called Steamco, that was inspired by words like this, by the thinking like this, from a great man, Sir Ken Robinson, who so tragically passed away this summer. Welcome to this, the first of a short series of podcasts called Talkwalkers 20. Dedicated to the memory, the inspiration, the work of Sir Ken Robinson, whose number one TED Talk has had over 300 million views and inspired people all over the world. Indeed, Ken Robinson, that very TED Talk inspired me, as well as a trip to a festival, reading half a book by one of his former colleagues and associates. Inspired me to start Steamco 10 years ago in my son's school in Paddington to bring the community in to inspire our kids with creativity. In some of his books, Sir Ken talked about finding your element, and I think through his inspiration, I've truly found my element with Steamco, which brings together my background of making, of being an engineer, of being a Blue Peter child, of selling, of just generally being passionate about something that I love doing. And I would never be able to thank him enough for his support over the years. I can't pretend to have known Ken particularly well or have worked particularly closely with him. But was really, really grateful to him and his wife Terry and the family when he agreed to do an interactive interview at an event we ran in Liverpool to launch Steamco outside of London, our first regional event. He then endorsed an application for me to be a TED Fellow, which was just remarkable. I was just so grateful for that, alongside Professor Sugata Mitra, then at Newcastle University. And I remember meeting him a couple of times at conferences and events in England and in London. He was so warm and so friendly. I tried not to be too much of a fanboy, I must admit. And I remember taking a back seat when he came to speak at the BET conference in London. And my two boys had both been given the afternoon off school to come along and see this guy who they'd obviously heard and seen so much about at our dinner table. And my youngest son made a break for it and managed to get through security and get an autograph and a selfie with Sir Ken, which is very, very, very special. I'll never forget being at an Arts Council conference in London with 500-600 people there and some very big names in the world of art and culture in the UK. And Sir Ken was on a live link from America answering questions, and somebody asked about broad and balanced curriculum, and Sir Ken referenced STEAM, the STEAM agenda, which we're supportive of. I can't pretend it's everything for us. And he just stopped halfway through and said, "I've seen Nick Corston tweeting, so if he's there, you do need to have a chat with him because he's your man," which was just lovely. He said some lovely things about our work, so forever grateful, so inspired. And I hope that this podcast can in some small way be a thank you, a tribute, but more importantly, a part of his legacy, because we are not stopping this journey. We are not stopping what we're doing now. We all can play our part to be part of Sir Ken Robinson's legacy. I'm not going to say too much now, because this podcast is in its entirety a session that I hosted at the Creative Coalition Festival, organised by the Creative Industries Federation and Creative England in London in November 2020. I was delighted to get three people together to join us on a panel. The first, Professor Anne Bamford from the City of London, who runs an incredible project called Fusion Cities, Fusion Skills, which quite literally is a project to bring to life a lot of the thinking that Sir Ken Robinson talked about in that TED Talk. We also have Kenneth Ulumyawa Tharp, who was CEO at the place, the dance centre in King's Cross, of which Ken Robinson was patron. And Shona McCarthy, who's now CEO of the Edinburgh Fringe Festival Society, but who was formerly CEO of Londonderry 2013, when that city was City of Culture for Europe, and used creativity and the inspiration of people like Sir Ken Robinson to bring that city together around art and culture. Three people representing, in their own ways, art, creativity, tools and people in education, in work, and in lives, in many of those people actually in more than one way. The whole podcast series includes conversations long and short with people who knew Sir Ken Robinson, who worked with him, and who, like me, were inspired by him, and possibly like you if you're listening to this. I hope you'll find it interesting. In that opening piece, Sir Ken says, "Are you concerned about education? I am." I've changed that really a little bit in the work that we do at Steam Co to ask people if they care. Because everybody cares about something in their lives. And I didn't really know much about education. I can't pretend that I really cared about it until I had children and saw the system and got a better understanding of the system. With many incredible people working in it, committed, hardworking, many people working around a system that they're given to work with, many people taking that system and making of it what they can, many people fighting against the system in some cases. But I think the key thing to the agenda, to be part of Sir Ken's legacy, to drive creativity forward, to put creativity first in our schools, work and lives, is to truly, truly bring this conversation out of schools and connect it with the world of work, the creative industries that rely on creativity so much, to bring it to broader society where creativity is a healer, a connector, a celebration and a way of quite literally expressing our humanity. Which is why when I joined the Creative Industries Federation about 4 years ago, and just a few years ago saw Sir John Sorrell, the founder of the Creative Industries Federation, the founder of the Saturday Club, the founder of the Cultural Learning Alliance, reference how Sir Ken Robinson had inspired him, I realised we had to share this conversation with this audience. So whether you're in a school, whether you're in the creative industries or in any industry, or whether you're in society working in community organisations or a parent or a carer, this podcast series is for you. Because you're going to get a lot of learnings from it, I hope. We're going to chat to people like Richard Gerver, who was a head teacher once and who was inspired by Sir Ken Robinson to become an author, to become a broadcaster, to become a speaker. Not just across education, but across innovation, across leadership. We're going to hear from people like David Price, another colleague of Sir Ken's. We're going to hear from Professor Guy Claxton, who was at university at UCL with Sir Ken Robinson. We're going to hear from Mark Featherstone Whitty, who runs the most amazing school in Liverpool, the Liverpool Institute of Performing Arts, or LIPA, and who also co-founded the Brit School. We're going to hear from people, we're going to hear from parents, we're going to hear from teachers, we're going to hear from business people. I really hope you'll enjoy this series. Our children, our country, our schools need people who care. I call them creative carers, people who care about creativity, who care about children, who care about all our futures. And if you're interested in supporting our work here with Steam Co, I ask that you maybe consider supporting our Patreon, a crowdfunding type project, a subscription model that we are just setting up and launching with this podcast, the hashtag Creative Carers Patreon. From £1 a month to £4,000 a month, if you want to fund one of our drop trucks and put a Steamster on the road for 2022, there's something level there for you. And if you can't afford £1, then don't worry, just get in touch. If you can afford £5, we'll give you a t-shirt. We need you to be supporting this. If everybody who believes in creativity could pay £1 a month, we would be able to wash our faces and not be so beholden for grants and handouts. And we have a very clear plan, which I'm going to tell you about over the course of this podcast series. Thanks for listening. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast wherever you get your podcasts, iTunes, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Deezer, whatever, and do please rank. And if you've got some comments, if you want to chip into this conversation, please send a sound file to yourturn@steamco.org.uk and we'll stick you in one of the podcasts in the future.
I love that podcast with Matthew Taylor from the RSA. What an interesting guy. And so lovely to hear that conversation between the two of you. You know, I don't know if we really do know what creativity is, and I certainly don't know if it's something that we can teach, but I do know that we can create the conditions in our schools to make it happen. And I just think that work like Nick's work, work like Matthew's work, if we get that down into schools, we got a chance of changing how we do things. Doesn't mean getting rid of knowledge. Doesn't mean that we kick the baby out of the bathwater, but it does mean we can take new creative looks at ways of doing things. So exciting to see that stuff happening. Want to see more of it. Love listening to the podcast. Everyone so far has been a fantastic conversation, so I'm just looking forward to hearing the next one, the next one after that. It's turned into a must listen. Thanks for the work you're doing, Nicky. You're doing a great job.
Lovely bit of feedback there from Ed Finch, a primary teacher, on the podcast that we did last year with Matthew Taylor, the CEO of the RSA, which Sir Ken Robinson was very keen to support and did a great animated talk for. Also, check back and listen to the podcast with Mark Featherstone Whitty that we recorded with him in Liverpool there, talking about his times with Sir Ken Robinson and the inspiration. Also, some interesting snippets there as to what Nick Gibb, the schools minister, said when he first met Sir Ken Robinson, and also some insights as to what form or what shape or who might be behind a foundation to provide some real legacy for Sir Ken. So no more ado. Let's go live to BBC Television Centre, where I, a dad, have literally erected a pyramid stage that we used at Glastonbury in the summer, a pyramid stage made from cardboard, creativity and code by another dad. You've got to see the video, but for now, enjoy the audio. Thanks so much for tuning in.
UK industries to lose up to 400,000 jobs this year. The country's creative industries to face a loss of 74 billion. UK architecture set to lose 1 billion in revenue. 6 in 10 jobs in the UK music industry could be lost this year as live music and touring collapse. Deafening silence. We won't keep our curtains drawn, and we won't leave our stories untold. One day soon we will pick up our tools and press the play button once more, because power surges when people come together. This is our plan to reimagine. This is our creative coalition, and we're not going down without a fight. Creativity is in everything we do. It's in the music we listen to, the games we play, the photographs
we take. Let's have those hands in the air, England, London, the UK, the world.
And the news articles we scroll through every morning. Creativity is in our blood. It's our undeniable DNA. We won't be trained, we won't be set, we won't be cast. But someday soon we will reimagine, redefine and reignite.
This is our call to arms.
We're an unshakable force to be reckoned with, and we will come back stronger than ever. Testing, testing, 1, 2, 3. Can you hear us loud and clear? We are one unified voice, and this is just the beginning. The world is on the verge of a new creative era, and this is your chance to be there.
What can I say? How do you follow that? Well, you follow that with a short film to set the scene, to explain to you why we are here on a cardboard pyramid stage. Because this summer I got a grant from the Arts Council, from the Department of Digital Culture, Media and Sport to live stream. We went to Glastonbury. After Glastonbury was cancelled, we went to a school community led by an incredible man, Brian Walton, a school community leader. And he let us do something remarkable in his playing field. He let us build a structure, a cardboard pyramid stage on which we celebrated art, we celebrated creativity, we celebrated the community in his school, across the country, live streaming to the world. And that's what we've built today here at White City, the home of television, BBC Television Centre, because we have brought that pyramid stage to Television Centre for the Creative Coalition. And that's what we're talking about today. Phew, it worked. It worked. There's a chap called Seth Godin, and he said, it might not work, but here's the thing. The guy who invented the ship also invented the shipwreck, and either you're in or you're out. Either you want to play this game or you don't. Art isn't something we do which is conventional and boring and industrialized. Art is what we do when we're truly alive. And that's what we're talking about here at the Creative Coalition Festival and event this morning. We are here today We are here today in memory of this amazing man, Sir Ken Robinson, who inspired my journey, the second half of my life. In memory of Sir Ken Robinson, today we are putting a call out for creative carers. People who care about creativity, people who care about children, people who care about all our futures, the name of a report that Sir Ken wrote for the British government a few years ago. And the event today, we're launching a podcast series in memory of Sir Ken Robinson. We've done an Art Connects podcast, which featured the CEO of the RSA, Matthew Taylor, the Education Minister of Wales, Kirsty Williams. The whole of Wales has got a creative curriculum, for goodness sake. And this amazing man here, Richard Gerver. Richard Gerver wrote an incredible book, which calls for one simple thing in his Education Manifesto, Manifesto for Change, and trust him to do it on a green cover, because that's all gone a bit transparent, but not to worry. On the front of there, it says, this collaboration vision for education. We have to collaborate. We have to collaborate between schools and business, and that's what this is all about. I'm a dad, and I was inspired by this amazing man, Sir Ken Robinson, to do what I could do, to walk his talk. And the podcast is going to be hashtag WalkTalkers20. I was inspired by his TED talk. I was inspired by reading half a book by this man, Guy Claxton, on what the point of school is and what we need to be educating our children for, and a weekend at a festival called Camp Bestival. And I thought, I want that in my kids' school. How can we bring a creativity festival into schools? So Ken's talk talks about creativity. And I've been a member of the Creative Industries Federation for 4 or 5 years now, and I always remember going to a session run by Sir John Sorrell, who launched and co-founded the Creative Industries Federation. I'm going to dedicate today to him and Sir Ken, because when Sir John did his leaving talk chatting to Peter Bazalgette there, he talked about how his work, his fantastic work, starting the Creative Industries Federation, starting the Cultural Learning Alliance, starting the Saturday Club, to bring art and creativity to kids who wouldn't get it otherwise in their school or their personal lives. He said that Sir Ken Robinson had inspired him too. And he was horrified when I told him that Ken Robinson is loved and vilified in equal measure in education, that Ken Robinson has been described as a butcher given a ticker tape parade by the National Union of Pigs by some people who are opposed to his thinking. You know, and that's about as negative as he's going to get, because today is about celebration. It's about celebrating Ken's work. Now, I apologise that so far it's been the white male show, myself, Sir John, Sir Ken, who obviously couldn't be here, and Peter Bazalgette, who's been incredibly supportive, now chair of ITV when he was at Arts Council, incredibly supportive. But it's not all about white men, you'll be glad to know. Marva Rollins here has been incredible for us, Marva Rollins, OBE. She's too busy, she's running a school, she can't be nipping out to do a talk. Here's another white guy, we'll squeeze him, and this is an incredible leader. This is Chris Dyson, the head teacher of an incredible community school up there in Leeds, who believes that creativity and inspiration is the key to engaging young people in their learning, to getting them to achieve and deliver. And behaviour is an issue for him, and he uses creativity and engagement for engagement. Another person who couldn't be here, Rachel Snape, an amazing head teacher. Isn't that the sort of head teacher you want your children to be learning from, who plays the ukulele at conferences, who brings 30 ukuleles for the whole audience? Another person who couldn't be here today, sadly, was Lem Sisa, who's been incredible. But he said to us that creativity is not the monopoly of artists. Ken Robinson said creativity is now as important as literacy. That is not to say that creativity isn't important. It's saying it's as important as literacy. We're not bringing literacy down to creativity's level if you perceive creativity as not having a level. And for me, this is about education. It's about educating parents, teachers, and other people in society who don't understand the value of creativity, because it is our future. Creativity can inspire children in their learning, it can create careers, and it can make the world a better place by bringing it together. And that's what we're going to be talking about today. A slight diversion, I'm afraid, now, because we're not about party politics here, but we are about politics if they affect policy that affect our children and our creative industries. And I know that that's the stand that the Creative Industries Federation takes as well. I'm going to quote somebody who was once considered a terrorist, so please cover your eyes if this offends. Education is the most powerful weapon you can use to change the world, said Nelson Mandela, I think now one of the most celebrated people in the world. And for us, it's about creativity, it's about art, it's about education. It's about art inspiring our young people. Their art could be whatever, but art is what we call it when what we do connects us to somebody else. And that's what art is. We have to help our kids find their passion, find what Sir Ken Robinson called their element, and help them aim not just high, but higher than high. Their art could be painting, their art could be photography, their art could be dancing, their art could be design, their art could be DJing, their art could be fashion, their art could be football. You've got to be in a school when you say, who likes football? And all the hands go up. When you relate it back to science, you relate it back to maths, you relate it back to management and business, and suddenly they go home and say to their mum, do you know, I love football, but if I don't end up playing for Tottenham or for Liverpool or Everton, then maybe, notice I have to do Liverpool and Everton in the same sentence there in this talk, it doesn't matter because they might still make some money out of it. Coding or robots or even rockets. And you will not believe the fun we have in school communities teaching them to make paper rockets like this and fire them using a bike pump, or rockets like this using dynamite to engage whole school communities. So rockets or Stevenson's rocket, we believe quite simply in art for all. Because art is what we call it when what we do might connect us. And that's what we're talking about here today. And I have got the most fantastic panel of speakers joining me today, who I'm going to introduce in just a moment. But just top line, we've got Anne Bamford, who I only met, oh gosh, 6 or 8 months ago, who runs a fantastic project in the City of London. She made a point yesterday, which is a bit disappointing, really. She's not political. Because the City of London is an apolitical institution and local authority, which is great. So no politics in her session. We've got another super guy who's been a rock to us for many years now, since he actually came to a talk I did at the RSA 6 years ago. I know he doesn't look old enough, and I don't. But Kenneth Tharp has been incredible. He was CEO of the Place Dance Centre when I first met him. He went on to become CEO of the Africa Centre and is now a highly respected and highly sought after art and culture consultant. And finally, Shona McCarthy, who I connected with working on the Festival UK 22, trying to think about some ideas for that. And I was introduced to people who introduced me to people, and I ended up meeting her, because that is how art connects. And that's what this is all about. We're going to be introducing those three people very quickly. In fact, that would be quite a good thing to do now. So if I press this button here and that button there, we might just have Anne Bamford. Can you hear me, Anne? Please, if you can.
I can indeed. Fantastic. Can you hear me?
Okay. Oh my goodness, it works. I just have to take a deep breath here. Well, fantastic. So thank you so much for joining us. Anne, you've got this F word that I know you throw around a lot, and this is an adult show, so feel free to tell us about the F word in a couple of sentences.
Yeah, so the F word is fusion skills, and creativity is one of the top 12 fusion skills. The City of London, we've done a lot of research looking at which skills are the most important skills to enable you to not just have a good life, but to really flourish in your education and learning, flourish in your social and personal life, but also flourish into employment and future jobs and skills. And so we've done a lot of work to, if you like, isolate what are the 12 most crucial skills that you will need to be able to flourish. And everyone here will be pleased to know that creativity is certainly one of the core ones.
I must admit, I thought I was quite cool and trendy about 6 or 7 years ago when we invented Steam Co. And then when I met you, you said, oh, Steam is so last year, you know, that's just science, technology, engineering, art, and maths. And it's all about the collaboration, the communication, the co-creation. And I said, well, actually, that's the co bit for us, because co stands for collaboration, communication, all those sort of things. But I don't want anybody thinking we give a damn about Steam. I remember Ken always said it's not about acronyms at all, because you might as well put an H for humanities in, and then you come up with an acronym that even I can't pronounce. Ken always did a very good job. You knew Ken quite well, I think. Can you sort of remember any of those moments or how he inspired you?
Yeah, we first met each other probably now 25 years ago, and we were on a panel together in Australia, and it was one of those moments of where you have this sort of, you know, you meet a soulmate who was then on the other side of the world from where I was working and living. And it was one of those things where you sort of realise, you sort of, you know, that miles and space are not as important as thoughts and aims for the future. And it's sort of somewhat ironic in that at the time I was working as a teacher in schools, and Ken was a director of education in the local authority. And now, in a way, my role in the city, I'm strategic director of education and skills. So I'm not, you know, I'm performing a sort of similar role in a way, but one of the things that immediately attracted me to things that he said was I'd always used not only the F word of fusion, but the F word of flourish. And Ken had said in his speech at the time that it's important that children in school don't just survive, that they flourish. And that was like a big sort of yes, hear, hear from me, because it was we actually need to ensure that this is something for every child. And I've worked, for example, with UNESCO, and one of the United Nations declarations from the 1940s was saying that every child has a right to arts and education. And I said that word every is such a tricky word, because it's really hitting at the heart of what we're trying to do, that it's something for all children. And it also actually goes on to say every child has the right to arts and culture and to enjoy it. And I think that notion of not just doing it, but actually flourish by doing it, is such an important part of the work we're trying to achieve.
Fantastic. I mean, how would you summarise Ken, Sir Ken, if you had to just say to somebody, I knew this guy called Sir Ken and he was... There you go. The other two have got the chance to think about their answers to that trick question, haven't they now?
He had a wicked sense of humour. He was very self-deprecating. He was passionate about what he believed in. And he had a way to communicate that reached across different boundaries. So I think that, you know, he was a very skilled communicator. It was authentic to what he believed. And, you know, he did it with a good sense of humour. I mean, I think he also embodied that sort of, idea of a sense of fun. And he had a good sense of fun.
I would absolutely agree with that. I met him two or three times and he was just so generous. And I think a word for me, because everything in the world is so binary and so toxic, I think the word for me, and this isn't that you're right or wrong, but I'm dying to show off, is gracious. You know, he was very generous and he was very gracious and accepting of other people's perspectives. And we had in the series I spoke to Mark there at Lipper in Liverpool, who runs the Liverpool Institute of Performing Arts, and he told me how Ken went to see the schools minister, who I'm not going to name, and the first thing that the schools minister said to Sir Ken was, "So you're the enemy." You know, it's just, again, I'm going to keep it positive, and I know somebody's going to keep it. Thank you very much, and don't go away. No logging off or checking your emails. Stay with us, because I'm now going to go to somebody who I've known for 4 or 5 years now. As I say, Kenneth Stark. Hello, Kenneth. Can you hear me? We need to do that check first.
I can hear you.
I couldn't hear you again. I had you on mute. You can hear me. I couldn't hear you. So fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us. So when I first met you, actually, you were at the place, weren't you? Tell us about what the place does and what your role was there and how you came across Sir Ken, in fact.
The place is a contemporary dance organisation, and at that time when I met you, I was the chief executive of the organisation. But the place, for people who don't know it at all, it has its own theatre, it has its own associate artists, it has a school teaching vocational dance, and it has outreach work, classes for adults and children. It's the UK's leading centre for contemporary dance development. So obviously education was absolutely core to what we do. And when I arrived at the organisation as chief executive, I felt that contemporary dance is a small niche art form, and I wanted to try and see if I could attract some high-profile people who were really eminent in their field to act in a way a bit like a kind of banner or a kind of glue that would draw other people in. And the first person I thought of was actually Sir Ken, having attended more than one of his talks, including one at the RSA. And it took me about 6 months to get an appointment with him. But I'm very glad that he accepted that. And one of the things that he did for us, amongst many things he did for us as patron, was I invited him to give the second annual Cohan lecture. And that was an invitation to respond to a very simple question: what matters? And he chose to speak on the subject of why dance as is important as maths in education.
That's right, I remember that. Fantastic.
It was a terrific talk. In fact, that video, which is on the place's YouTube channel, I think is still the most watched video they have on their channel. And that's no surprise for anyone that knows Sir Ken or has had him speak. He's so brilliantly engaging.
Absolutely, and a lot of people have this idea that creativity is a bit of a soft option and it's not as important as maths, but it's actually when you've got the two together, you get this synergy of 1 + 1 = 3, and that was a fantastic talk. I commend that to anybody. You were at the Africa Centre as well. There's a common ground there, obviously not just yourself, but dance and culture. I mean, what sort of work were you doing there? Did Ken's influence indirectly affect what you were doing there or affect that community, would you say?
That's hard to answer, Nick. Look, the Africa Centre is a cultural centre. Mm. I would say, look, it probably didn't have a chance to affect in a tangible way that anyone else could see. But certainly one of the things that centre was developing was in its new building was a digital learning research centre. And certainly all Ken's thoughts about how we connect with each other, how we engage, I think one of the brilliant things Ken advocated was, I think he spoke so well about this, the way in which creativity is fueled by the way in which sometimes seemingly unrelated people and ideas connect with each other. And so I was very keen, for example, with the African Centre, that we would have a global classroom that would connect children in the UK with children across the continent. And I think one of the favourite examples I have of Ken, sorry, not of Ken, but of that alchemy that's created when different kinds of things connect, was the example of when a Formula One racing team worked in collaboration with the premature baby unit. And that was so that, you know, for them to pass on everything they knew about efficiency in those pit stops that happened so quickly, and to try and pass it on to premature baby unit, where in another way, every second literally was a matter of life and death. And I think you can rarely plan the outcomes of those kinds of things, but the way in which we connect with each other is absolutely crucial. And look, Anne mentioned that so well, Ken's humour. And when I think of Ken, it's hard not to smile because he had the brilliant sense of humour. And I don't know if these were exact words, but I do remember him saying something along the lines of creativity being a great way at school of breaking the rules without ending up in detention.
Why didn't I see his TED talk when I was at school then? Thank you, Kenneth. I'm going to come back to you. Are you okay to hang around for 20 minutes or so? Are you half an hour? You're not going anywhere, are you? So let me just press some buttons here and see if I can get Shona up. Hello, Shona. Look at you with your fancy background. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can, Nick.
It's always a bit of a nail biter, I have to say. Can you hear me? Because I've got quite a lot of buttons to press here, as you can probably imagine. Now, we connected, actually, as I said, because I've been very excited about this festival of creativity and innovation for 2022, and everything we've done at Steamco has been part of that. And the government, Martin Green recently announced a call to get people involved, and I came across you, and I said, oh, Shona, please feel sorry for me. Lots of people are being horrible. We're getting tweets that it's the Brexit festival, and by having something to do with the creativity festival, I'm into Brexit or I'm anti-migrant, so it's just terrible, help me. And you said, Nick, in 2011, 2012, when we were bidding to be the culture borough, culture city with Derry, in Londonderry there in Northern Ireland, you had two pipe bombs left on the doorstep on a Monday morning, which kind of put my woes and my Twitter trolls into perspective. So could you maybe sort of just tell us a little bit about that project and how creativity played a part in that city of culture? I mean, it was just wonderful talking to you that day.
Yeah, and again, I'd kind of acknowledge Ken's role in that as well. I was one of those people who was involved in the culture sector in Northern Ireland when Ken first came over there in the late 1990s and brought all of his thinking into place just as we were a society emerging from conflict. So I kind of grew up with that, grew up in my career through the culture sector, infused by Ken's thinking and his humour and his passion for creative learning. So whenever I got the chance to head up the Derry, Londonderry City of Culture, it was bringing all of that learning into play and really having a desire to have a year of culture that reached every single person in the city, and that kind of broke down all sort of previous notions and ideas about culture and high arts and low arts and who could access it and who couldn't, and literally just tried to give a whole city permission to be creative for a year. And it is genuinely the most phenomenal time of my life. I still look back with enormous pride at what the people of Derry achieved in that year. And Ken was part of it and came and helped us and did talks and really kind of helped to contribute to making that such a success. But the real key was in, and you know, once those two pipe bombs had happened at the start, it was because people felt they were going to be excluded, or that they felt that it was some sort of cultural imperialism being imposed on them. And as soon as permission was given for everybody's idea of culture and everybody's kind of story and creative expression to be included, then that all kind of was left behind, and it genuinely was probably one of the most cohesive and connecting projects ever in the city.
Wow, I don't think I'd beat that all for the rest of this session, actually. That feels quite remarkable. So would you recommend being a city of culture, a borough of culture, a country of culture, if there's a lot of money available to deliver that? Is that something you'd recommend to a city, to a borough, to a country?
Yeah, I mean those titles are useful in some way. What I'd recommend is more the Edinburgh model, actually, where I am now, and having the privilege of being the current sort of custodian at the Edinburgh Fringe Society. And to me, there's a city that didn't need to be given that designation, but has supported, invested in, and nurtured culture for certainly for the sort of 70 odd years since the end of the Second World War, when the festivals were established. And I think that's what I'd aspire to, more than the kind of temporary titles, because sometimes people can use the temporary titles and then not have the long-term legacy investment that's really needed. So I kind of prefer for a place to be serious about this. And I suppose, you know, I was really connecting with what Kenneth and Anne said about Ken Robinson there too. Of course, he delivered and communicated like a stand-up comedian, and he just captured everybody in his space. But boy, did he also have an intolerance of lazy thinking, or people who were just doing things for, you know, for the soundbite or whatever. I mean, he was thorough and passionate, and had a conviction that could also tear people apart if they didn't take the subject seriously. And I think that was one of the things that I admired about him, equally with his humour and comedy.
It's interesting you say that, actually, because I do feel like a bit of a blagger, I must admit. And I was so delighted when Ken endorsed me for TED Fellowship, which I didn't win, which is fine. But, you know, that's that, you know, given that he's quite rigorous, because he doesn't do things by halves. And people keep telling me how thorough. Guy Claxton was telling me the other day, Professor Claxton was saying what a rigorous man he was in terms of his approach to just about everything he did. I must admit, I'd almost forgotten somehow that you're CEO of the Edinburgh Fringe Festival Society. I did the first ever live webcast from the Edinburgh Festival in 1995 on two laptops and a 28 dial-up modem. So that's my claim to fame there. But my concern, and I love the Fringe and I love the arts world and culture world, my concern or my observation, and I'm sure you're going to give me a sort of a webcam smack for saying this, but isn't the Edinburgh Festival really just a middle class thing for posh people from down country to fly in for a month and fly out again? A bit like the old circus, you know, load of elephant poo in the car park and, you know, look forward to the next one. I mean, is the Fringe a bit more than that?
Well, I would certainly like to think so. If it wasn't, I wouldn't be there and wouldn't be interested.
That was cheeky of me. Sorry, I didn't mean any of that. You know that. That's just a provocative point, but go for it. Sorry.
These are some of the myths that grow up about something that is sort of 73 years old. And, you know, when you look at the kind of 900 shows that were from Scotland that were a part of the Fringe last year, and when you look at, you know, 850,000 local residents buying tickets to go see shows at the Fringe, and then the work that we do in the society, where we connect across 32 communities in the city and have developed a relationship with those least likely to attend the festival over the last 5 years, and the way that we're really trying to work with the schools. And last year we had stages that had on the High Street in the Royal Mile, because teachers told us that they wanted children to have the opportunity to perform at the Fringe, so we had stages on the Royal Mile specifically for school children to perform. And there's just so many examples of how this festival really kind of is the festival without barriers, in terms of what form of creative expression you use. You can have everything on the fringe, from comedy to world-class contemporary dance to world-class theatre to improv and stand-up and, you know, jugglers on the high street. There's no kind of hierarchy of what is art and what isn't, and the audience themselves become the curator, because there is no one artistic director of the fringe. So I still think, fundamentally, for all its flaws and the challenges it has, that it's a platform for creative freedom of expression like no other. Still,
I don't want to be too sycophantic here, but I'd like to think that with you in the driving seat, inclusivity, outreach and broad and balanced are going to be a core part of that offer. And, you know, hopefully we can collaborate at some stage. Well, thank you very much for that. I'd just like to sort of just think of a few questions, actually. I'm going to go back to Anne, if you don't mind, actually. You're not going away, are you, Shona? I know you're very busy. You okay? You're not going to go off and run a fringe festival while I shut you off? Let's get back on here. And the TED Talk, so Ken gets a lot of criticism because, you know, he did this TED Talk and sort of threw the cat amongst the pigeons, if you like. And he got some criticism because there was no plan there. How would you answer that? I mean, what are you doing? With the fusion skills, do you have a plan? Do you have a way that schools, communities, countries can execute this?
I think we've taken a sort of very long-term view of it as well, that we've sort of thought, well, how do you put the steps in place? And I don't think, though, it's fair to necessarily criticise a TED Talk for not having a plan. It's a sort of 15-minute or 20-minute slot, you know. And I think that what you've got to try and do is, with that plan that you have to bring a lot of people alongside with you. You know, you need to climb that mountain with a lot of people. And if the real benefit of the talk can be sometimes to get people who will come along on the journey. But in terms of the sort of practical implications, if you look at that, say, with getting fusion to be a concept that is a concept that will operate throughout people's lifelong learning, and regardless of economic context or regardless of political context or where it's happening, to get those sort of both small and large scale changes, I think you do need to have a plan and a structure. And you know, we took the approach with fusion, and the reason we use fusion as opposed to STEAM is that as we go forward, the notion of separate disciplines starts to get very merged, because it's very hard to say what is science and what is art. The very best science is in itself a form of art. The very best art can be incredibly scientific in how it's developed and executed and displayed, especially now when we look at, for example, you know, graphic, interactive art, those sort of things, where your knowledge of science and physics is so high. So the idea with going with the term fusion was that it encapsulates that idea that we're moving away from these separated categories of knowledge and skills to human capabilities that are enabled to operate across the board. And if you think that when a child learns, so if you look at a very young child learning anything, they don't think about separating them off. I mean, even in the, you know, for a baby, their very first investigations is that they may investigate an object by tasting it, by feeling it, by rubbing it on themselves, by, you know, they don't say, well, I'm going to investigate this using only this capacity. So that's just sort of explains a bit why we use the fusion term. But going back to the specifics of your question, we took the approach of saying, let's tackle the hardest things first. So people were concerned around definitions, they were concerned around measurement and assessment, and so we said, well, let's work on those things first. And then we've progressed to look at things like, how do you bring around a systemic change? How do you we talk about, in a simple sense, how do you grow a dot of activity? So how do you make that section of activity bigger? And then how do you join up dots? Because one of the other aspects of this, and I think this is one of the real strengths Ken had as well, is there's no good just talking to our own sector. And I think the arts have often been very comfortable talking to themselves. It's really important that you look across sectors. So how do you get systemic change across education, across business, working with people in other fields and other areas from where you're working? And then ultimately, we're also very much concerned with that concept that I began with, which is an inclusive all, because I think as well that it's very much upon us all to always be thinking, when we bring around change or when we bring around policy, who are the people who we could leave behind if we're not really careful? And we don't want a concept such as fusion to become an exclusive concept, something that, well, some people have it and other people don't. We have to look at geographies where they're missing out. Are there certain places where people are not getting access to this? We have to look at, are there certain groups within our society? Are there certain populations, even within a class or within a you know, an area? Are there certain individuals that don't feel that they're included? And it's incumbent upon us to think about that piece. Then once we have that, once we can start to make systemic change, how do we make sure that that change brings along everyone with us and also is sustainable from an ecological point of view? Because if we bring about a change, which we've seen that happen over histories, and I think one thing the pandemic has taught us, and you started with that, is that we really have to think about the reactions from our actions and make that change sustainable and ecological and not resource intensive.
Well,
we've used the resource too much.
That's very much a part of it. I know a big part of his agenda was actually comparing a child not with an industrial unit that you process, but with a natural net object that you nurture. So not process, but nurture. Kenneth, back to you, actually. We've seen the TED Talk. Can you think of thoughts around the implementation of that, or how that's inspired people that you may know in their practice?
I mean, first of all, you know, it was a brilliant talk. It's still, that talk still inspires people who've maybe not heard of Ken. And again, in his self-depreciating way, you know, he poked fun at academics as being people who think of their, you know, their body as just a transport system to take their head to the next lecture. But of course, he was an academic himself, so he couldn't make that joke without also, you know, poking fun at himself. But I think what he did, it was really raise the question that I think one of the things it raised for me was the notion of embodied knowledge. You know, that we're not just heads on a body. That, you know, there is. And I'm not quoting him now, I'm probably going into what he sparked for me, which was the notion that there is an intelligence that resides in every single cell of the human body. And yet, in spite of that, there is this sort of hegemony in the way, even in the language we use, where we talk about, when we use phrases like mind over matter, as though somehow the body is just some unruly miscreant that needs taming by the intellect. And I think what Ken understood so well, you know, and he loved dance and he loved dancers, and he understood that, you know, we are made up of these different kinds of intelligence, and that there's an intelligence that lives throughout our whole being. We're a whole holistic entity, and actually we do ourselves a disservice, I suppose, as human beings, if we don't listen to our body, for example. We don't recognize the totality of that. And so I think that was why he didn't hesitate when I invited him to become a patron of the place, because he could see the way in which dance connected people not only to each other but deeply to themselves. You know, I feel that the privilege for me of being a dancer for the first 25 years of my career was that it taught me, I suppose on a daily basis, you practice what it meant to be totally present in that moment. Actually, that reminds me of, if I've got time for a very quick anecdote, which was when Ken came to do that talk at the place about why dance is important as a matter of education. You know, we talked for some time about the content and, you know, the title and how it was going to look. And we went up, before the audience came in, we went up into the back of the theatre, into the lighting box. And he asked the technician if he could just bring up the first slide. And after a couple of a moment of looking at it, he started chuckling. And it was that point that we both realized that the slide had got the words the wrong way around. And it actually said why maths is as important as dance in education. And the reason that was particularly funny, I suppose, was because he spent hours talking to his assistant about, oh, can we do the font a little bit more here? And can we change the color a bit there? And, you know, I suppose the thing about being creative and being in your element, you know, is all about how to be totally present in that moment. And it escaped our attention until that second. Now, of course, he dealt with it. It was quickly changed before the talk. And then during the talk, he made reference to the fact that this has happened and he got it the wrong way around. And he said, of course, the talk about why maths is important as dance is the talk I'm going to give next week for the Maths Association. So, again, a brilliant ability just to... such an incisive mind, but use his humour to really just challenge our own way of looking at things.
No, thanks for sharing that. There's lots of lovely moments. In the podcast series we're doing, we've got Mark from Lipper, as I say, Professor Guy Claxton, David Price, Richard Gerver, Rachel Snape, Penny Hay, all sorts of people are going to be contributing to that. It's going to be a fantastic podcast. And I'm looking forward to putting this on there and moments like that. One of my favourites was Matthew Taylor, actually, CEO of the RSA, said that his mum had a bit of a crush on Sir Ken. And I don't think it was anything of the sort of anticlimax when she actually did meet him and he had a little flirt with her. And he's one of those people that makes everybody feel at ease. I mean, my son got his autograph at the Bet show, and they had that a very special moment, you know, with thousands of people, security guards. My son squeezed through the bouncers and got through, and it, you know, just had that connection with everybody. The TED Talk's one thing. We obviously we talked about that. I mean, the thing for me, I think, which I found interesting when I looked into Ken. So I saw the TED Talk, read Guy's book, went to a festival, and thought, what can I do about this? And I just turned 50 at the time, and you know, I'm not going to use the word midlife crisis, but I did think, what the hell should I do with the second half of my life? I'd worked in advertising, marketing, digital, events, PR, website design, the whole thing. And I stumbled across this book, actually, as part of my journey. This is the element Finding Your Passion, which changes everything. And I read it, enjoyed it, threw it away. And it's only about 2 years into Steamco, I realised I'd actually found my element in this project, because I am that Blue Peter child who makes rockets, who does coding. As I said to some people earlier, I mean, I've got a robot here I made that actually will solve a Rubik's Cube in 2 minutes, which I know Chris Dyson up there in Leeds loves. But, you know, this was a dream for me, creative industries career. I always said I've got my elevator pitch. I've got a master's degree in electronic engineering. I've got grade AA level design. And as you've noticed, a big mouth. So I kind of get technology, I'm creatively aware, and I love selling a good story and selling creativity. And for 2 years, I realized that's exactly what I do. I found my element. And this is the second half of my two half life. I only thought there was one until I realized there was a second half. And so Shona, let's sort of think about you. I mean, I'd like to ask you all, have you found your element? I mean, Shona, can you relate to that? Oh, let me bring you up. Sorry, I couldn't hear you then. Start again. Can you relate to that?
Yeah, for sure. I can relate to that. Now, can you hear me okay?
I can now. I've got to press a button every time you start talking. That's what catches me out. Sorry.
I'm at the tail end of a family of eight, myself and my younger brother. And my dad was a bricklayer and my mum had eight of us, so she was fairly busy. But I like to kind of tell this story that the first six had to be really sort of pushed out into jobs, like good jobs, like get a job in the bank, get a job in the civil service, you know, get a job for life. And all my brothers were trades, until it came to the last two of us. And I think we kind of got indulged by everybody else to pursue the things we were interested in. And I was interested, because of two inspiring teachers, I was interested in art and music and literature from such a young age. And my brother Ronan just wanted to play pool. And my parents let us and supported us, and my brothers, elder brothers and sisters let us and supported us. And, you know, my brother Ronan is now one of the top pool players in the world. He's been the UK champion, Scottish champion, All-Ireland champion. And I'm heading in this role at the biggest performing arts festival in the world. And I suppose that's one of the reasons why I'm a bit of a proselytizer for this whole agenda. Because I do believe if you're supported, or at least given the chance to pursue spending your life doing the thing that you love to do and that you're passionate about and you care about, then you've got so much more chance of being a good human being or being healthy and mentally well and fulfilled and making a more positive contribution to the world. And I think too often, not just in schools, but in families as well, people dismiss the idea of young people actually having a chance at something. I remember when I was running a children's film festival in Belfast and bringing brilliant people to do workshops and practical participative filmmaking projects with young joyriders in Belfast, and being told by an assessor who came in to look at the work that we really needed to manage young people's expectations. And that always kind of stuck with me. You know, these were young people from a very socially, economically challenging background, and I was being told to be careful to manage their expectations. Could you imagine anybody ever saying that in a you know, private school where it's paid for education? I don't think so. So yeah, I've kind of seen from personal experience how just being able to wake up every day and do the thing that you love just helps in every possible aspect of your life. And it's definitely a kind of thought process that I've brought to raising my own two daughters as well.
I think we've taken a little bit of this element thinking indirectly. I can post-rationalise everything I do, because when you do lots of things, some of it makes sense eventually. And I tend to think, you know, we say we have to help our kids find their art, okay? We have to help them aim high, higher than high, to build castles in the sky, to quote Bill Withers. And I looked that phrase up, building castles in the sky, and it's actually a phrase that is around not thinking beyond your station. You know, you stay where you are. And, you know, there's another podcast, another whole chat about this. Why is there such opposition to creativity? And I suspect there are a number of reasons. It's quite expensive. If you believe that education only exists to create people for the workforce, and if robots are going to take the jobs, then how on earth do you justify austerity pennies on educating people for jobs that won't exist? Unless you believe that they can make the world a better place with their art and creativity, unless you believe they can connect communities, unless you believe that they can actually have a more fulfilling life, live a better life, which is why we're so grateful for the support of the RSA, because I know that that's one of their mantras, is helping everybody live their best life. Let's jump back to, oh my goodness, I've got to press the right buttons here. Jump back to Anne, actually. And did we ask you the element question? I can't remember. I can't do if I'm coming or going, to be honest. I have to unmute you, don't I, for start. Thanks for that, Shane. So Anne, the element, did you find your element in your global travels?
I did, but I was incredibly lucky because you had to wait till you were 50. And I found my element when I was 10, but I found it in a quite harsh and cruel way, really, because I wasn't very good at school. And I was attending school in the time when they used to stream children, where you would have, there was a top class and there was a bottom class, and it was even worse than that the rows in the class were, you know, the brightest kid was at the front, and if you were the, you know, the child, you know, who, you were right at the back, and I was in the second back seat of the lower streamed class.
That's not good.
And I really struggled to learn, and I just couldn't connect to learning. And I had a really fortunate experience that I'd had. I'd had two terms of a really diabolical teacher, and whose methods involve humiliation and you know, heartache and emotional torture, really. And fortunately for me, he retired or was taken out of the school, but somehow disappeared. You don't know these things as a child. And he was replaced by a teacher who, for whatever reason, suddenly sort of began to put me in artistic experiences. So she would, for example, say, before I write anything, draw a picture. And she cast me in the lead role of the class play, and she entered me in an art competition. And she, within one term, so within, you know, 12 weeks of school, she had turned me from being a complete underachiever to having an IQ test, where the IQ test showed that I had a very high IQ. And that's not to brag. It's to actually show the importance of why I became so committed to this area. Because had I not had that experience, had I not had a single term of education that used creativity to turn on my learning button, I wouldn't be where I am today, because it was having that learning button turned on that enabled me. I now have, you know, a number of degrees. I've got, you know, more degrees than I have letters in my name. You know, and I've been able to experience that. And so I was absolutely committed, and still am, that every child gets that option. Because if you don't, the opportunity cost, what you lose by not unlocking that capacity within a child, is enormous. You lose their personal development, you lose their social engagement, you lose the potential they have to contribute to the world. It's vitally important to give that opportunity to every child.
Absolutely.
Because without it, you know, that's it.
And that's our children. That's what's behind our hashtag Art for All thing. I mean, I'm not going to go into it in detail now because time's very tight, but Chris Dyson up there on Parkins Primary, he did a school play, a high school musical a couple of years ago, and he commented at the end in his talk about how a number of children came up to him and said, I've never been picked for anything in my life before. And they had a part in that performance, and they will remember that for the rest of their lives. I do look that up. Amazing. So just very quickly, I've been ignoring all the messages, and apparently the audio is not very good, and I do apologise for that. The good thing is, you'll be glad to know, it sounds great here, but no, don't worry, we are going to put this on a podcast. We are recording this. We're going to make it available. We're launching a Patreon programme because we need some funding, because we need to get more of our little trailers on the road. We want to pay artists. We want to really empower this country. The bad news is, or the good news actually, probably, I think we might have dodged a bullet. We did not get selected to be one of the 30 organisations to develop ideas for the Festival 2022. We are going to be doing a hashtag Festival 22 because I've decided that hashtag with Inspire Nation 21 next year. So if anybody wants to get involved, we need funding, we need sponsors. We are doing a grassroots revolution, the movement that Ken Robinson talked for, to unleash creativity across this country. I found my element, and it's not just live streamings. I need to get out again. So we're going to do that. And on the 4th to the 6th of December, we're doing a 3-day festival at Parklands Primary. We're not building a cardboard pyramid stage, we're building a cardboard Tracy Island for all the Thunderbirds fans, and we're going to launch a dynamite rocket that's the size of 10 buses, and we're going to launch it on a Saturday night. So that's my little plug for that. So apologies for that. It's lovely to see Jess Royal here. We've got Maria, something Canada, Stuart Burney, bigged up Anne for something she said. Lovely to see Penny Hay. I know Penny is very close to Ken. Penny was a patron of the Forest of Imagination and the fantastic work they do down there. Anne Donahue, Stephanie Clark, Anna D'Amicus. We're fantastic. These lovely people. I should have looked at the messages earlier. G. Davies asking me to clean it up for the watch back. Don't you worry, we're going to clean this up. Elizabeth Draper, G. Davy, oh, Anne-Marie's there. Anne-Marie's a girl, Quinton from Leeds. We need to be collaborating with her. Just fun to say thank you all for checking this out. I do appreciate it. So, Shona, you've had plenty of time to work out a good answer to the question of what your element is. So, did you ever find your element? I've asked you that already. I did, didn't I?
No.
I thought I started with you. Have I not asked anybody then? Have I asked you, Ken? Ken, it was Ken, wasn't
no,
it?
No, you haven't asked Ken.
Senior moment, live on the internet. Sorry. I'm showing my age now. I'm actually really 25. So, Kenneth, so a couple of minutes. We've got about 4 minutes left. So, if you could do a sort of quick finding your element, and we'll all go and do this in the pub, I think, after. Oh, I better unmute you first. Sorry, Kenneth, I didn't press the button. So let's rewind that. So, Kenneth, tell us about your element.
thank you, Nick. In terms of my personal journey, I was incredibly lucky. At the age of 5, I was always bouncing around to music. And I was living in Glasgow at the time, and my parents found this ballet teacher. So I started ballet at the age of 5, living in Glasgow. You'll know now that we moved from Glasgow when I was 7 and a half. But that's another story. So I was very lucky to find my element earlier on. And actually, now, the thing I think I couldn't live without is not dance so much, but music. It's the thing, I need that. But what I would love to touch on very quickly is, look, right at the beginning of my professional dance career, I spent 2 weeks in a school on a residency working with young people who had, had very limited experience of dance. And I began to see firsthand the transformational power of dance. And one of the things that happened throughout my whole career of going into schools was the number of times teachers would come up to you and they point out individuals or sometimes small clusters of students as troublemakers or ones to keep an eye on. But then so many times this happened, not just to me, but, you know, with many of my colleagues. By the end of the project, when those young people were on stage, it would be those same children that had been pointed at as troublemakers, which were the ones you couldn't take your eyes off on stage for all the right reasons. And it was as though they had found their element through dance. And I think that's one of the reasons, you know, it's one of the reasons in a way perhaps why I'm a school governor now, because I'm so passionate about the role that all the arts play, not just dance, in helping young people really discover so many aspects of themselves and their potential. And I think Anne was speaking very much to that, the importance of having that initial opportunity. And sometimes the teachers are surprised when they see, you know, they see the students on stage. It's almost as though they don't recognize them. You know, one school where I'd been working with a group of boys for 10 weeks, the teachers literally were open-mouthed. And at the end, I was told that whole group were underachievers.
Wow.
Well, the good news is that they'd had that opportunity to do that project. And someone recognized that. The bad news was that they, at 12 years old, they were already labeled.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
I'll pause there.
We've literally got 2 minutes left. I can't thank you all enough for this. I mean, the big question is, I think we all have a responsibility to do what we can to be part of Sir Ken's legacy. Steamco, we want to roll this out. We want to engage and inspire and empower communities to run creativity days, to bring artists into schools, to create employment for artists, to celebrate the power of art. Because for us, art is what we call it when we bring creativity, tools and people together. And tools are technology that weren't invented before you were born, or whatever that phrase is. You know, it's all about the tools to empower creativity and bringing people together. So I'd ask for what each of you, basically, if you could all just give me a word or a very short sentence of what you think Sir Ken's legacy could be, or what you are going to do to be part of his legacy, or what you're doing. And I'd like everybody out there at home, pop a message in the notes there. We have got a blog up on the Steamco website, so if you go to steamco.org.uk/news/creativecoalition20, we'll document what we've done today. We'll put the link to this video up there tonight, a link to the Patreon. So that's just the Steamco blog. Go in there. Please ignore the blogs about Dominic Cummings and the schools minister, because obviously that was a dark moment when we got a bit grumpy about that. But as I say, you get in our way. We don't do party politics at Steamco, we do policy. And if your policy impacts creativity, children, or my, or your, or all our futures, we're coming for you. There's no doubt about it. We are not messing. We're fired up because Sir Ken Robinson has left us his legacy. We are his legacy. Anne, let's make sure we get these buttons pressed. Anne, what's your legacy? What are you going to do?
Three words then. I'm stealing three. Diversity and the importance of diversity is key. Second word is making mistakes. So you have to welcome making mistakes. And the third very practical word, because I started with practical, is also pilot. Pilot test things. Have a go. Don't wait until you've got the thing complete. Start pilot testing. Do your idea tomorrow and get started.
Brilliant. And I'd suggest everybody go and check out the Fusion Skills, the Fusion Cities, the amazing work that Anne is doing there in the City of London. This is a powerhouse. This is the economic powerhouse of the world, and it's happening there. It's happening in Wales on a country level. It's happening in the City of London to power the whole world. Kenneth, what are your thoughts on legacy?
Just to say, I was very lucky to be part of a conversation earlier this week with Kate Robinson, Sir Ken's daughter, who he used to describe as his emissary in the UK when he was working, when he was still based in LA. Kate is working with the RSA and Bath Spa University and a number of other individuals and organisations who had a long legacy with Sir Ken. Kate is really committed, devoting herself to taking Sir Ken's legacy forward. So I think the RSA Bath Spa University will be doing an event, I think, on the 15th of December. But so watch this space.
Oh, wow. That's news.
And I think
brilliant.
Kate will be developing plans next year.
I mean, Kate, I've met Kate once or twice, so generous, so lovely. I mean, the warmth and generosity that exudes from her. Very grateful also to Sir Ken's wife, Terry, who 5 years ago arranged for us to have an exclusive interview with Sir Ken when we launched Steamco, not in London, but in Liverpool, his home ground. So that was very, very special. I even connected and collaborated with one of his brothers or his nephews, who runs a fantastic crisp factory. So if you want some fancy floss crisps, check out Slab Crisps by, I think Keith Robinson makes those. Fantastic. So Shona, beat that, legacy, Sir Ken Robinson.
Wow. Well, I think these islands, I think Ireland, Scotland, England and Wales, I think we're uniquely placed to take on this challenge. I think we're incredibly creative nations as it is. We can do so much more. We can lead the world in this agenda. I'm really excited that Wales are taking this opportunity to do no testing next year. Imagine if some new alternative could come up to testing young people through exams. It's kind of exciting and watch that space. But to me, it's about kind of inspiration, communication, and removing barriers. Just remove the barriers, whatever acronym you want to use. I don't care if it's fusion, steam, shape, creativity, art, whatever it is that connects with people and that gives them a sense of the importance and the possibilities that art and creativity and the cultural agenda opens up for their children.
That's what I'm... Thank you so much. That's the closing music. Thank you so much. You've been amazing. Shona from Edinburgh, Kenneth from somewhere up the road in North London, and Anne in the city, as far as I'm concerned. Thank you all so much. I can't thank you enough. Thank you very, very much for your support today. Stay on the line for the debrief. That was the Steamco Creative Coalition talk. Thank you for checking it out. Live from London, live from a cardboard pyramid stage, doing justice the only way we know to this great man, using our creativity, using our imagination, using cardboard, using code, a fantastic day in memory of Sir Ken Robinson, one of the most inspiring men that ever walked the planet. But we now all have to walk the talk. We have to follow his example. On the 4th to the 6th of December, we've got a three-day festival of creativity and a school that's on a housing estate in Leeds, Parklands Primary with Chris Dyson. We're going to be live streaming assemblies into schools in the next 2 weeks, and then the 2 weeks up to Christmas, we're doing the 12 days of Creative Christmas. I don't know if you saw this ad on the TV the other day. It's an ad by Amazon. It's a beautiful ad. It talks about the power of art. It talks about the power of creativity. And as we did 2 years ago when we ripped off Elton John's ad for John Lewis, which sent us on a UK tour, we ripped this ad off. I don't know if you saw this, but I'm going to play it out now because this film is everything we stand for. It's everything we've talked about today. This film is about the power of art, the power of creativity to connect, to inspire children, to build economies and to connect communities. Thank you so, so much for joining us today. I'm going to play it with this film. Check out the podcast, check out the Patreon, be part of the movement that Ken Robinson said we all need so much. So thank you so much for listening to that podcast, the first of our hashtag Talkwalkers 20 podcast series, and the launch of our hashtag Creative Carers Patreon. If you can support us, please do check that out. We've got a number of podcasts coming down the line from here on. The audio wasn't brilliant on that, and I apologise for that. It was a live stream across a different platform to the one we're used to using, and the future podcasts will be a lot better. So thanks for tuning in. Please do subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts, iTunes, Google, Deezer, Spotify, whatever, and do please rank it and send us a sound file. Send us some feedback, tell us what you think, and we'll stick you in a future recording. Thanks so much for tuning in. We really hope you'll be part of Sir Ken Robinson's legacy in any way you can, whether it's with us or any of the other organisations and movements that I'm sure are going to spring up all over the world, or even in your own individual practice or place of work.